Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are taking a scalpel to a topic that I'll admit can sound a little dry.
Just a bit.
Right. But it is absolutely vital if you want to predict a nation's economic destiny. We're talking about country risk.
And if you're looking for that shortcut, that way to understand why some economies are just, you know, crisis magnets and others are stabilizers, you have to look at their books.
Which means we're diving deep into the balance of payments.
And that's exactly where our source material says we have to start. Any effective country risk assessment, the ability to actually forecast instability, it begins and it ends with an analysis of the balance of payments, or BOP.
It's like the nation's ultimate financial statement. It tells the whole story, not just the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And that statement, it reveals these critical signals for a crisis. You see these warnings pop up, often across seven major indicators all at once.
That's right. When the BOP starts flashing red, you immediately see stress. You see it in inflation and growing trade deficits. You see currency volatility, exchange rate pressure.
And it goes deeper than that.
Oh, much deeper. It highlights these underlying problems with productivity, with competitiveness. And this is crucial for you to understand. The BOP shows the external financing flows, including capital flight.
Capital flight, money just leaving the country.
Exactly. And that determines whether a country is just facing a short-term liquidity problem or something much worse, a deeper solvency issue.
The road that leads straight to a sovereign debt crisis.
And that's our mission today, to map that road.
Okay, so let's start with the foundational document itself. What exactly is the balance of payments?
The best way to think about it is as the ultimate national scorekeeper. The BOP is an accounting framework. It's a precise statistical record of all economic and financial flows between the residents of one country and the rest of the world.
And this is recorded, what, quarterly, yearly?
It can be monthly, quarterly, or yearly. It really just depends on a country's statistical capacity.
And since it's a strict accounting system, I'm guessing it follows some pretty strict rules, like double entry bookkeeping.
Precisely. Every single international transaction has two sides, a receipt or an inflow, which we call a credit.
And the other side?
Is a debit or an outflow. So inflows are things like exports, selling goods and services, or receiving capital. Outflows are the opposite, buying imports, sending out interest payments, paying down debt.
Okay, but here's the part that I think always confuses everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You have billions, trillions of dollars constantly sloshing around the globe.
Right.
And the rule says the total balance, by definition, must always equal zero. Always. How can that possibly be true when we know so many countries are drowning in debt?
It seems like a complete paradox, doesn't it? But it's true because the national accounts, they must reconcile mathematically. It's an accounting identity.
So the balance is forced, in a way.
It's forced, and that's the key. If a country runs a massive deficit, the system is forced to balance through these really dramatic, highly visible mechanisms.
Such as?
The accounts zero out by, say, drawing down the country's central bank reserves.
Right.
Or by securing emergency financing from the IMF.
Or worse.
Or worse. By accumulating payment arrears, just not paying your bills. Or, in the most severe cases, by declaring a debt default.
Wow. So when you hear debt default balances the account, that sounds less like an accounting trick and more like economic warfare.
It's a powerful way to look at it.
Yeah.
The accounts can balance smoothly, or they can balance catastrophically.
Mm.
It's a statement about the sustainability of a country's habits, not necessarily its health.
Okay, so before we get into those habits, there's a small detail we need to clarify. Who exactly counts as a resident?
This is important, yeah. It often trips people up, especially with multinational corporations.
Okay.
So residents are the obvious groups.
Right.
The government, households, individuals, your domestic firms. But here's the nuance. If a subsidiary of, say, a huge German automaker has a plant in the U.S., that plant's financial flows are treated as transactions by a U.S. resident.
Even if the parent company and all the shares are owned in Germany.
Exactly. So if that factory exports cars, it counts as a U.S. export in the U.S. balance of payments.
I see. And what about organizations like the World Bank or tourists?
International financial institutions like the IMF or World Bank are always considered foreign residents. And tourists or students staying less than a year, they're also foreign residents. It's about your center of economic interest, not your citizenship.
Got it. Okay, now we know the rules. Let's talk about the data itself. Gathering this information sounds like a statistical nightmare.
It is.
Which brings up that classic trade-off, right? You can have data that's quick or data that's accurate, but you can rarely have both.
That is the daily reality for central banks everywhere.
Yeah.
And beyond just simple errors, the biggest challenge to BOP accuracy is what's called undercoverage. Transactions just don't get reported correctly.
And our source material mentioned deliberate manipulation, things like over-invoicing or under-invoicing goods to move money around illegally.
Yes, combined with just poor customs enforcement. It's a massive, globally recognized issue, and it introduces a shocking level of uncertainty.
How big are we talking?
It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
One of the IMF sources for 2025 gave a specific estimate. They calculated what they call a world missing exports black hole.
A black hole.
Exceeding 1,000 billion U.S. dollars. A full $1 trillion.
$1 trillion missing from the global books. That's not a statistical error. That's a hole in our understanding of trade. How do they even account for that?
Well, they try. Statisticians use line item called net errors and omissions to try and force the balance. But the fact that this missing amount is so huge just underscores why interpretation is so critical.
Which brings us to the main point of all this, the main interpretive function.
Exactly. It's to see whether a country is financially sustainable. Or, in the phrase economists always use, whether it's living beyond its means.
The shorthand for that is I is greater than S. Investment is greater than savings.
That's the core macroeconomic relationship. Mm. You see, the BOP is split into two big accounts, the current account and the capital account. We always look at the current account first.
Why are they?
Because it acts like a private company's income statement. It's summarizing your performance, your trade, in goods, services, income, against the rest of the world.
So how does that current account balance connect directly to living beyond your means?
It's a direct arithmetic link. The current account balance is literally equal to national saving minus domestic spending. So if your investment at home is higher than your savings,
you have a current account deficit.
You have a current account deficit, and that shortfall must be financed
by issuing liabilities to foreigners,
which means your debt level goes up.
So if my country invests more than it saves, that money has to come from somewhere else. Now, is that always a bad thing?
Well, not inherently. If it's financing highly productive investments, like a new factory that will generate future exports, that can be good. But the crucial insight is that a trade imbalance is always rooted in that macroeconomic balance.
Savings versus spending.
And if that deficit persists, it always, always requires a painful macroeconomic correction.
Things like hiking interest rates to encourage saving.
Or a currency devaluation to make imports more expensive. Or just raising taxes to reduce everyone's spending power. There's no free lunch.
Okay, let's look inside that current account. You said it has four components. Let's start with the big one. Component one, the balance of trade.
Right. This is the simple one. It's the trade in physical stuff, in merchandise. Think oil, cars, machinery, clothes.
And the U.S. example for 2024 was pretty stark.
It was. The U.S. exported about $3.2 trillion in goods, but imported over $4.1 trillion.
Which leaves a goods deficit of about $920 billion.
Yes. And that's just the visible physical deficit.
Which brings us to component two, the balance of services, the so-called invisible balance.
This is things like freight, insurance, shipping, banking, and a huge one, tourism. It's a massive economic driver for so many countries.
We saw this with Vietnam.
Exactly. For Vietnam, tourism is the largest piece of its service exports. It's expected to bring in $20 billion in 2025, which is about 4% of their GDP. It's a powerful, non-physical revenue stream.
Okay, component three gets into financial services, specifically investment income. This is where past decisions, past debts really start to show up.
They really do. So investment income is the money you earn from foreign financial assets you own. Think dividends. Interest payments you receive.
And the flip side?
The flip side is investment debits. That's the interest you have to pay on your foreign liabilities. In simple terms, it's the interest you pay on your country's accumulated debt.
And this part is incredibly sensitive to global interest rates. We've all seen how volatile U.S. rates can be, and that volatility hits developing countries' current accounts immediately.
It's a huge compounding factor. Look at Tunisia. Between 1990 and 2022, even during a period when global interest rates were at historic ultra-low levels, their interest bill on foreign debt just kept climbing.
How is that possible if rates were low?
Because the sheer volume of their outstanding debt was so massive, servicing it became this huge drain on their current account no matter what global rates were doing.
That's staggering. So even when the market was trying to give them a break, the weight of past debt was too much.
A tough cycle to break. And finally, component four, unrequited transfers.
This sounds like free money.
It's basically money that flows one way without any immediate good or service in return. The primary example is private transfers.
Remittances.
Correct. Immigrant workers sending money home. It's an absolute lifeline for economies like Mexico, Morocco, India.
And the other type is official transfers.
Right. Things like grants, military aid, or debt cancellation, which is very important for what they call the heavily indebted poor countries.
The figures for Mexico are huge, aren't they? The reliance on remittances from its workers abroad?
It's massive. It runs somewhere between $40 and $70 billion a year.
And have those flows been stable?
Historically, very resilient. They were surprisingly insensitive to U.S. business cycles for a long time. That changed with the 2008 financial crisis. They've been rising again since 2018. But our sources show a lot of uncertainty for 2025 and 26.
Because of global recession fears hitting U.S. jobs.
Precisely.
Let's use that U.S. data again to really analyze this idea of structural deficits. The U.S. has run these deficits in its trade balance and current account for decades now.
It has.
Which means the U.S. is structurally importing capital to finance that gap between its investment and its savings.
That's a powerful way to put it, and it brings up a common question. Does this sort of macroeconomic explanation let things like politics and trade policy off the hook?
Yeah, what's the answer?
According to the sources, the answer is no. While trade policy might dictate who a country trades with.
The overall balance, the size of the deficit, is still determined by that fundamental I greater than S gap.
Exactly. So if the USA stopped trading with one country entirely, that deficit would likely just shift to another country, unless the U.S. fundamentally changed its national savings rate.
And it's important to remember that the U.S. goods deficit isn't the whole story.
Not at all. It's partially offset by a massive U.S. surplus in services. Things like intellectual property, tourism, financial services. That makes up roughly a third of all U.S. exports.
And people often focus very loudly on one country, like China, as the cause of the deficit.
That narrative really needs some context. While China is a major component, the U.S. trade deficit is actually highly concentrated in only about 8 countries, and they aren't all developing nations.
And that concentration has shifted over time, right?
Yes. If you look at the ratios going back to 2000, you can see the mix changing. It really illustrates that the deficit is a function of U.S. saving behavior, not just the trading practices of one specific partner.
Let's bring this back to Vietnam for a second to show the complexity of modern trade. We mentioned their huge exports in garments and electronics.
And this is a perfect example of how interwoven global trade really is. Vietnam's key exports rely heavily on imports.
What do you mean?
The analysis shows that 75% of the value of the raw materials, the equipment, the machinery that they import is ultimately transferred directly into the value of their final exported product. Their entire current account performance is built on these external supply chains.
Which makes them incredibly vulnerable to global disruptions.
Incredibly. And that dependency is a critical piece of the risk assessment puzzle that you can only get from the current account.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, the key takeaway is that the balance of payments is really the central tool for country risk assessment.
It absolutely is. The current account is your income statement. It shows if you save more or less than you invest. And the capital account reveals how you're financing that gap.
And that financing matters a lot.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Especially if it's dominated by that short-term, volatile, hot money. Because that's what eventually leads to those painful macroeconomic corrections we talked about.
And they are never painless.
Never. A devaluation means your average citizen's cost for imports, gasoline, medicine, food, can jump 20 or 30% overnight.
Yeah.
Hiking interest rates stifles investment and job growth.
Which brings us back to the ultimate question that the data seems to ask, especially when you look at a country like Tunisia, which has run these colossal current account deficits for years. If a current account deficit inevitably demands these painful corrections, is there a fundamental sustainable limit? Is there a line in the sand for how big a country's deficit can get before a sovereign debt crisis just becomes, well, unavoidable?
The BOP is tracking the speed limit.
Yeah.
And ignoring it only guarantees a crash. It's something to keep mulling over as you watch the global economic headlines.